Welcome to Retracing Our Roots here on KTLO. I'm Sammy Raycraft, and joining me in the studio, Vincent Anderson and Heather Loftus. Good to have you here, Heather.
Long time, no see.
Well, you know, a little knee surgery will kind of, you know, it's hard to navigate the stairs of the studio after some knee surgery. I walked around the building this time.
I'm glad you didn't have to have that done in Mountain Home's history, historical past.
Modern
medicine is good.
It is, but you know, we're going to start doing a special little series with Baxter Health soon and talking to retired physicians and talking about the growth of the medical community as well in this area. So
I'm really excited
about that because, I mean, you know, we talk about the waterways and the lakes and the rivers, but the growth of the medical community has been vital to who we are today as well. So I'm excited to start that here in a few weeks.
Speaking of waterways, last week we talked about the Collins fellow that had that tragic demise out in Cotter, and you got a few questions about that.
Lewis Collins, that story brought in a lot of comments and messages and emails to me this past week from friends up in Ozark County. I had people in Cotter contacting me because Lewis Collins is from Ozark County around Gainesville area. He died in Cotter by dropping off 43 feet off of a tall pier of the railroad bridge, and what happened afterwards. And I did reference there was a lawsuit. I have friends. It's always nice to have friends. I have friends that are actually looking into what happened about that, and there are some family members possibly that may remember what's going on. And so questions are going out to those family members, and we're going to get a little bit more clarification, I believe. And I want to thank my friends for helping me out. Doing research is not all on your own shoulders. It takes favor and grace of other people to reach out and help with everything going on, because just you're not a lone ranger on doing this. You need help.
You got a lot of fans that have been.
Oh, they're kicking in. I'm loving it. And so, since we mentioned Cotter, there's another episode coming up that I want to talk about right now with Cotter.
Okay.
And it's going to have to do with alcohol. And so, Cotter
was. Please do tell.
Glad I'm here today.
So a few years ago, I just thought I would do a deep dive in Baxter County history, and I picked out the year 1908. It just seemed like a really good year because I saw some murders popping up. I thought, well, what in the world's going on in 1908? In September, mid-September, around September 14th, 1908, there was a big crowd that gathered off the square on the west side of the square where the Veterans Plaza is at today. Mm-hmm. That area right there was a big gathering spot for a big bonfire, and I found something that referenced that. It says, in the neighborhood of 100 gallons of bottles of whiskey was destroyed by Sheriff Mooney and his deputies on Saturday on the west side of the courthouse. A large fire was built, and the liquor with the barrels and the cases were all burned. In the neighborhood of 500 people witnessed the destruction. From the upstairs windows in the courthouse, Judge Meeks was sitting serenely, looking out towards the west out of the courthouse window and watching the order being given and carried out. And so we have this huge group of people gathered around outside the courthouse, and they are burning bottles of whiskey. And where did this stuff come from? So there were two big barrels that were also thrown in after the fire was going, and a nice-sized stream increased its flow as a small brook or a branch running down the hill. And so that would be running down towards 7th Street, that area. It was a fiery stream as the liquor burned like oil, the bulletin said.
I bet the other stream was the tears running down some fellers' faces.
So, owing to the daylight flame that was perceptible, no eye could see the flame except when pieces of paper and straw were thrown into the stream and the fire burned up immediately. And the crowd around in the scene was all chanting, and they were cheering because it was Prohibition. And so a bunch of liquor was captured some months before, in Cotter, Arkansas. And so the residents of Tilden Flippin, have you ever heard of the name Flippin?
Oh, yes. A few times.
Yeah, okay. So they are the ones that were making some of the whiskey. And the whiskey was locked up into the jail. No one was locked up in jail, just the whiskey was put into the jail. Also, there were bottles of beer that was remaining there in Cotter that were raided. And the Pointer store in Cotter, Arkansas, and the pharmacy there. So the pharmacy was producing beer. Medicinal purposes,
of course. Pain relief.
So this is the first time the liquor was confiscated and ever destroyed in Mountain Home. The second largest lot ever destroyed in Baxter County was a lot destroyed in Gasville, Arkansas, a couple years before by Sheriff Eugene Mooney. And so we have this going on. And what's really interesting with this, underneath that article, there is a big tent revival meeting going on by the Methodist. And the Methodists are really pushing for prohibition and getting rid of the alcohol and liquor in the area. And there is a reason for that, because in 1893, there was a Methodist bishop that arrived in Chicago, Illinois, and decided that he was going to push his pasteurized grape juice. No longer will Methodists use wine. They're going to use pasteurized grape juice because he patented and invented pasteurized grape juice. He and his sons had the business cornered. He convinced the Methodist Church to go from wine to grape juice because that's what Jesus drank, pasteurized, because they figured out the patent back then.
What was his name? I think I've heard this story.
Okay. It's Thomas Welch.
Oh! Welch's
grape juice.
Welch's
grape juice. Yeah.
Light bulb. And so there was a message that was going around, lips that touch wine shall not touch mine. But it was coming out from this mouth of this beautiful, voluptuous woman in this nice green garment, reclining, holding a glass of Welch's grape juice. And then the message changed. Welch's only lips that touch Welch's shall touch mine. And so the Methodists were really cheering on and getting rid of anything that had liquor, alcohol, or anything else like that. And it was open to anyone, so children could really take communion then, because we had pasteurized grape juice, and it does not ferment.
I was going to say, what's the difference between pasteurized grape juice and what regular grape juice?
Regular grape juice has natural fermentation qualities and bacteria.
AKA turns into wine.
It turns into wine naturally. It will turn into wine naturally. It may not be the good wine. It may sour, but it will still ferment. And so if you pasteurize it, the way Thomas Welch figured out to do it. And listen, he was raised by an alcoholic father, and he was a dentist. And so you could go to the dentist, and you could go to him. Some dentists at that time in the 1800s would give whiskey or alcohol for the pain. If you went to Mr. Welch or Dr. Welch and have a tooth extracted,
out of luck.
You better go to the next county or somewhere else. But that was going on at the same time.
Next time I take communion, I'll have a whole new perspective on this.
Exactly. And so, I hope to hear more about prohibition in the Ozarks after this break.
There's more coming up.
You're listening to Retracing Our Roots on KTLO. Visiting with Russell Tucker of Raps Baron, sip, savor, sojourn. What does that mean to you?
Sojourn is the idea that we have just this short time together on this earth, and we have the opportunity to make the most of that. And so we wanted to create a space that welcomed all of our community to celebrate each other, to connect with each other, something that allows you to set your phone down, step away from the TV, and actually have real human connections with people.
Raps Baron in the Baker District, Mountain Home. Welcome back to Retracing Our Roots on KTLO. Vincent, we were visiting with our Canadian over here during the break and educating you about some of this history. Do you know that the state of Arkansas, to date, still has more dry counties than all the other dry counties in the United States?
Well, we are unique, aren't we?
When I first moved to Marion County in the early 2000s, it was quite the shock to find out there was no purchasing to be made in that county at the time.
Wow.
Yeah, we used to have to go up to the state line back in the day. Yeah,
yes.
That was a big deal.
Oh, that was a big deal. I lived on the other side of the state line between 201 and Highway 5 would be J Highway in Missouri. Mm-hmm. And I lived on T Highway. And so if you got tired of one honky-tonk or one part of the state line, they would come up in Missouri just a few miles, cut across the T Highway, and come back down. I remember as a kid picking up beer bottles and cans. And honestly, when Baxter County went wet, I knew that our ditch lines were going to look a lot better.
Of course, Retracing Our Roots is brought to you by Raps Baron. Vincent, I was curious. You were talking about beer, burning the beer on the steps of what's now Veterans Plaza. How did they make beer back then?
Pretty close to what they're doing right now.
Really?
Busch and Anheuser, Budweiser up in St. Louis, they are the ones that really had the technology in the 1800s, and they grew St. Louis. I'm just going to say they were a very big part of growing St. Louis. And so it's
were they drinking Busch down here in the early 1900s?
No, they were making their own
okay.
down here. And so the one thing about the funny thing you're going to read as you start comparing in the newspapers, they'll burn the whiskey and then they confiscate the beer, but you rarely hear about the beer being destroyed. It's confiscated.
Where does it go?
I wonder. But Cotter was the main producer of beer.
It went out on the river just like it does today.
It does. And I'm going to go ahead and bring up one more other story about this right here. And it has to do with doctors and medicine. So you're talking about in the future with doctors and medicine. There was something that happened here in Baxter County in 1899. And it not only made local news or regional news from Little Rock, it made news in St. Louis, Chicago, Washington, D.C. It made the London Times. It even made it to the newspapers in Sydney, Australia, and all the way from Baxter County, Arkansas. And it has to do with something. So if you go get whiskey somewhere and you're really secret about it, it's called a Blind Tiger whiskey. In Arkansas, they've changed the name of it back in 1899. They called it Blind Pig whiskey. So there was a doctor in town. His name was Dr. Jeremiah Benjamin Simpson. He lived on the state line. He and his brother, they were both doctors. They practiced all the way up into West Plains, Gainesville, and Mountain Home. They were basically circuit doctors going through here. And in 1899, there was a lot of cases of flu and sickness. So Dr. Simpson, who was also the mayor of Mountain Home, on the square, had his office. And he made his own concoction to treat for anyone who had any kind of sickness or disease. And a lot of times that you would just buy whiskey from somewhere in the vicinity and you would add your own stuff to it. Do you remember if you ever go to Silver Dollar City, you get these little rock candy sticks?
Mm-hmm.
That rock candy, there's something that they would take with the rye whiskey or the corn whiskey, and you throw like 2 cups of rock candy into a gallon of whiskey. You throw maybe a lemon, or a lot of times in this area they would do prunes just to sweeten it up, and so kids could actually swallow it because it was really – it's tough to swallow the whiskey, and so you doctor it up a little bit. They would put honey in with it. So this is what Dr. Simpson was doing here on the square. And one Saturday in January 18th, 1899, there was men showing up that were sick. And so Dr. Simpson
– were they really sick?
Doc, I don't feel too good, Doc.
So they show up at Dr. Simpson's office, and he is treating them with some kind of alcohol. Okay, and so out on the streets, 2 men drop dead. 2 other guys get into a wagon. They start pulling off, and they drop dead. Dr. Simpson also drinks some of it, and another guy drops dead. So Dr. Simpson dies. We have 6 guys in one Saturday die. Now,
what was in that batch of whiskey?
Oh my goodness. That was the question. They actually sent the whiskey up to St. Louis, Missouri for a test. It was heavily laced with ethanol. So if you go back and start looking, there was quite a bit of dry time through here and drought. So I do not know this. I'm going to speculate. I'm just, here it is. If an old farmer who's making whiskey with corn and he doesn't have enough corn to make the mash, I don't know, if you throw in the corn stalks, you're going to make ethanol. But there was ethanol in the whiskey. Didn't know it. You could not smell really that much difference in it with all the with the fruit, with the prunes in it and the honey and everything else and the rock candy. They drank it. They basically died of liver failure. I asked a doctor, what happens when you drink alcohol like that or ethanol? He says, well, your liver shuts down. And so that's they must have taken quite a few big gulps is all I know.
I'm feeling real bad, Doc.
So,
well, we lost our mayor and our physician.
Yes. Because of that, I'll also say because of that, of all the circumstances happening, my great-great-grandfather became mayor I don't know. Did he do that to the whiskey? He became the mayor of Mountain Home. His name is Thompson Henderson Wayland. And you'll see, if you go down the city hall, you'll see all the different mayors up there. And so his picture was up there. Now his picture's down at the Historical Society. But that all took place here. And the thing is, Dr. Simpson and his wife are buried in the Mountain Home Cemetery. Beautiful monument. And there was a story that she was just severely crushed emotionally by everything that happened right there. And so there we go with doctors and treating with whiskey.
That's a warning to stay away from the prune whiskey on the square if you time travel, I guess. But we've got much more coming up. Stay tuned. You're listening to Retracing Our Roots here on KTLO.
Visiting with Russell Tucker of Raps Baron. Sip, savor, sojourn. What does that mean to you?
Sojourn is the idea that we have just this short time together on this earth, and we have the opportunity to make the most of that. And so we wanted to create a space that welcomed all of our community to celebrate each other, to connect with each other, something that allows you to set your phone down, step away from the TV, and actually have real human connections with people.
Raps Baron in the Baker District, Mountain Home.
Welcome back to Retracing Our Roots here on KTLO, continuing our discussion this afternoon. Vincent, you've gotten a lot of questions about the Mountain Home Picnic and how that relates.
Yes. So I've had people write in that they're as a little girl, that they've actually been to the Mountain Home Picnic. Their relatives would talk about it. And it was just a really interesting topic. And I have more people, you know, asking me questions, where is this at? And there was a few little references about it, and it was kind of, you know, I kind of knew the general area. I happened to come across a letter from Mr. Tom Dearmore that he worked with the Shiras brothers. He ended up being the managing editor of the Baxter Bulletin. He wrote a letter, and I found the letter in a collection from the Judy Ramey Sharp collection at the Baxter County Library that when she passed away, her husband, Sonny Sharp, gave to us. And so I'm going through and I'm digitally scanning and having a good time just here and there. And all of a sudden, I see this Tom Dearmore, and all of a sudden, something catches my eye about a week ago, and there it is, the Mountain Home Picnic. And so I'm reading more and more of it. And he really goes into detail about it. And, of course, he gives a paragraph or so about, you know, the elixir that is going around on the edges of the
creating joy and happiness, I'm sure.
I guess so. And so it's a really interesting article. He says some things I didn't even realize or know. And so I would really like to go over some of the things in his journal that he wrote. And so this is again from Tom Dearmore. He wrote this in 1957. And he's kind of lamenting a little bit about the Mountain Home Picnic is no longer functioning in the area, and it's gone away for at least 10 years. The last Mountain Home Picnic was August 8th and 9th. Yeah, we have the heat going here. August 8th and 9th in 1947. It began in 1902. So it ran for 45 years. That's a pretty good run. And according to the Bulletin files, that was the last one I could actually find in the memory. So he actually said the picnic was a traditional ingathering of people, so typically of early American, it was only for 2 days. They came by the hundreds, some of them from the furthest hollows of the county, driving wagons loaded with watermelon and other homegrown edibles, and they were going to gather underneath the trees of the picnic ground. So I know exactly where the picnic ground is at. So we're going to talk about the thoroughfare first. The thoroughfare, there were two main ways to walk through the thoroughfare. And so if you go to Highway 62, just past the junction, Highway 62 heading east, right past Wayne's Automotive, between Wayne's Automotive and AutoZone, that is Morris Street. And so Morris Street is one path that people would walk down on the thoroughfare. The next one over would be Church Street. They kind of run parallel, and they head north. And so that's where it's at. Mr. Dearmore makes the reference that where exactly AutoZone is at, and I think this is kind of, you know, I drive by there the past week or so, they kind of got neon lights with this says AutoZone on it. That's where the Ferris wheel was at.
Wow, okay.
So every time I drive by there, I'm going, the Ferris wheel, and it's AutoZone. But that's where the Ferris wheel was at, and people were gathered there. He talks about all the different things that you could do there. They were eating the smell of frying hamburgers and beef in the air. I mean, I just get hungry already that as they were going through there. People sitting on the edges, and they were gathering together, and whole family units would come together and friends, and they would find shade trees. And he also mentions that some of the areas now are no longer able to be accessed because we have tourist courts through there. Well, there used to be a rock tourist court there. It just now slips my mind, the name of it, right there off Morris Street by AutoZone. But that's what he was talking about. And he says now houses are populating throughout that whole area. And so when the Mountain Home picnic went away, you know, people started building houses through there. He actually, here's one quote. He says, many a boy is growing up now earning money for his rides by driving tent stakes or carrying water for the carnival people. There are a few diversions then, and this event had to carry the youngsters through the whole year. This was the biggest event for all the youngsters. There was no TV, only a periodic traveling movie that would come through the Mountain Home. Kids today would probably think the picnic was corny. One of the biggest things there at the Mountain Home picnic was the hot air balloon. And he says the balloon ascent was a terrifying most of all. A large cloth bag was put over a fire pit and hot air was pumped into the bellows.
Oh, Lord.
When it was filled, the rider, usually clad in tights, which is very unique for that time period. That doesn't really happen often. Grabbed the rigging and rose several hundred feet in the air. The only way to get down alive was to jump with a parachute. There was a man named Charlie Gary, who still lives here in Mountain Home, was one of those intrepid balloonists that would jump out with a parachute. Also, the crowds would gather around in the evening. He said they would have an occasional fight where people would like to gather around and see what's going on. With those fights, they found out that that's where the moonshine was at. And so if you wanted something to drink, you'd be really quiet, listen. And where the fight's at there, you can probably find your alcohol. And so some funny excerpts there. And politicians would come up. There was a guy named Jerry South, a politician. If people are in the picnic area got too loud while he was speaking, he would come down off the stage, straighten them out, go right back up onto the stage, and finish his speech. So don't mess with Mr. South.
Nuts. Sounds like some of the town hall meetings that are happening around the United States now, right?
I was going to say, yes, absolutely.
Tell me, time frame, mid to late 40s?
The last one was 1947.
I would not get in a hot air balloon today. And I mean, this is, you know, my Lord.
You're talking about a canvas bag being thrown over a fire.
They would build a fire pit, and they had a canvas bag and a big steel cage to protect the bag from being burnt, and then they would pump that hot air through bellows to the hot air balloon.
I think you're pumping that moonshine before you pump that hot air balloon.
So. Now, here's just one quick question I had. Is 62, as we know it, going through there, is that like a dirt road at this point?
Yes.
And is it a highway, or what is it?
Is it even there yet? Is 62 even there yet, Vincent? I mean, you got all those side streets.
In the early days.
It's pretty close to where it's at right now.
Okay. It's just a path at that point, though,
yes.
Right?
If it was a state highway that could be actually manufactured and engineered, it would go straight.
Right.
62 is curvy. I mean, if a tree fell down somewhere, we're going to go around it. We're not going to move the tree.
Fascinating history. Me and Heather have decided we're not getting in any hot air balloons, though.
I knew that before the show, though, Sammy, so, you know.
You think they should bring the picnic back, or do you think the fair kind of celebrate?
I think the fair pretty much takes care of it. The other thing, I think, is that they always had it in the first week or so of August. We had the fair for, what, 5 years in August?
We just made the change back.
The change back. And honestly, folks, I thought it was hot because I was in a costume at the Casey House. That's hot. So, am I a little wimpy in my older age? Probably.
Listen, I do Bomberfest the second week of August every year out there with grills all day long. So y'all can handle the fair.
Okay.
Come on.
There you go. There's your Mountain Home picnic.
Well, our time's coming to an end for today, folks. Thank you so much for joining us here on Retracing Our Roots. And as we mentioned in the beginning, we want you to be part of the conversation. Send in your requests or your ideas for the show or questions to news@ktlo.com. I'm always in conversation with Vincent, and we'll send those off to him.
And we've loaded all the previous episodes on KTLO.com. So if you want to go to the Retracing Our Roots homepage there, podcast page on KTLO.com, you can find all the previous episodes.
Thanks all the way to the beginning.
Thanks to the many fans.
Pictures.
Yeah, thanks to the many fans of Vincent. They sent us some emails and said, hey, we're trying to binge listen all these past shows. So we appreciate everybody.
Yes.
And stay tuned for more. You're listening to Retracing Our Roots on KTLO